Welcome to I Am the Cute One, the most chaotic school dance in the podcast universe.
Let's spike the punch, grind to usher, and talk about our favorite topic, ourselves.
Hello, I am Donnie, and I am the cute one.
And I am Chelsea, and I am the cute one.
And we are here with returning cutie, the cutest one, Katrina Davis. Hey.
Hello.
Hi.
So, cuties, I don't know if Katrina said it to me personally. I don't know if she said it in passing on an Instagram story and I screenshotted it and held it captive. I don't know. But today is Rex Manning Day, and I know that Katrina likes Empire Records.
I love this movie. I don't remember either, but you're right, wherever it came from, because watching it again for this, I was like, I forgot how much I love this movie, but it absolutely was like every teen I wanted to be. Yeah. I was like obsessed with being this angsty as like a 9-year-old or whatever.
I remember at summer camp, and I can't draw faces famously, but I'm good at drawing everything else. And in summer camp, in my little notebook, I drew the movie poster, but none of them had faces.
It's just amazing outfits, just like a perfectly pleated skirt and midriff and just a faceless body.
It's the faces from the people who watched The Ring that were found in that closet.
Just like the scratched out, like an angry Liv Tyler.
It was. And you know what's even crazier? The day I was drawing that is the day the bird pooped on my head, but I used to wear so much hair gel that it bounced out.
Wow. A brush with death.
What are you even saying to me? That sounds like it defies physics. Bounced out? Like the ricochet,
because I screamed. I was like, oh my god, a bird shot in my head, and then I felt around and nothing was there.
More realistically, if we're thinking logically about what could have happened to the bird poop in your head, I'm guessing instead of bouncing out, it probably just joined forces with the hair gel,
became one with all of that got to be.
No, the hair gel had got hard at that point, Chelsea.
Yeah, it was like Teflon. Like, it was like when they burn an egg on a infomercial and then it slides out.
Yes.
I love that you had real life Jimmy Neutron hair as a child.
Yes. Until I went bald. Yeah. That was my style of choice.
Well, happy Rex Manning Day to all. Yes. The cuties are very fired up about this episode. There have been many people. Shout out to Lily, who has been trying to get us to cover this movie since we started this podcast. Yay. So I hope we do it justice. I also love this movie. Donnie, do you hate this movie? Because you usually, like, you hate music.
I hate the kind of music you like.
I'm having PTSD symptoms from our Almost Famous episode, where I was like, who hates Almost Famous? And Donnie literally lobotomy eyes the whole episode. Thank God we had Zell with us.
Here's the thing about Almost Famous. They are boring people and then sing boring songs. This, some of the songs aren't really my cup of tea, but they're not doing anything besides cleaning when they listen to it. So I just fast forward 30 seconds and then we're on to the next plot point.
There were some songs in here where I was like, wait, where did this song go or come from? The soundtrack are songs that I'm like obsessed with, but also songs that I've never heard before or since.
Yeah. And you know what, though? That's the sick part. It's the music we don't like, I bet, is the half of the soundtrack Chelsea listens to all the time.
Well, you know, I'm not going to argue with that.
With her sunglasses on, she's like, look, that's neither here nor there. I cannot confirm nor deny.
And who's to say I'm on the right side or wrong side of history? But I do think that that is the point of this soundtrack. I love when each of them gets the veto power.
Yes!
And I love that it really does, like, for 1995, it really did cross the gambit of like what teenagers were listening to. And I thought that was, I mean, I know it was a flop, but I thought that was so smart to be like, we're gonna get the Donnies, we're gonna get the Katrinas, we're gonna get the Chelseas to be like, oh, I love this song, oh, I hate that one, but that's okay, veto.
Yes.
Yeah,
it was so, I love that so much, just because Mark also becomes someone I love in this movie. But in the beginning I'm like, oh, no one likes Mark's metal music, and it made me so sad for him.
Yeah, there's a lot of people I don't like in this movie. We'll get to it. So this movie premiered October 20th, 1995. Fantasy by Mariah Carey was number one song in the U.S. No one needs to use veto for that. And at the movie theater, Get Shorty, Now and Then, and Seven were the top three movies. And on television this week, Littlest Pet Shop, Street Fighter, the animated series, and Goosebumps all premiered.
Ooh, Goosebumps. But also Now and Then. Ooh.
Wonderful things happening on all sorts of
media. Yes, like, my friend absolutely has a VHS of Now and Then that jumps because we paused Devin Sawa's butt so much.
My Cruel Intentions VHS skips a lot. I'm familiar with the old skipping VHS.
That's way more valid. At least that's hot. We were just like, ooh, butts. Butts running into a river. Like, Cruel Intentions is way
No,
better.
But listen, in 1995, you had to get what you could get.
Is that's Devin very Siwa true. And JoJo Siwa, are they related in any way, well, shape, or form?
No, because it's not the same name.
Sawa and one
Sawa. I see. Well,
Devin does great work on Twitter.
Love Devin Sawa's Twitter.
I just wanted an excuse to segue to JoJo Siwa really quick because I'm happy for her that she's living her best life, but let's take a nap. Let's maybe take a breath. We don't need to be fist pumping down every red carpet. I'm so happy she's able to be authentically herself, but maybe just turn down the volume a little.
Is this in response to JoJo at the iHeartRadio Awards? Yes. Did you see that? Disgusting.
Oh, why? What I want to see. Was it a lot?
She looked like one of the orcs from Lord of the Ring. And that's not a commentary. She's a beautiful girl, but the outfit. And then she just had the energy of like an MMA fighter going into the ring for the first time.
Let me see if I can find a photo really quick for you, Katrina. Oh, yes. I hope you can see
that. Oh, yeah. She went like full Mad Max.
Yeah. This was the Hunger Games. She did not have Lenny Kravitz as her stylist.
She was like ready to go. And then she just did the McGregor walk down the red
carpet.
Yes,
that's exactly
And like, it's not like the MTV Movie Awards. Like, here she is next to Niecy Nash in a full ball gown. Like, we need
there
to have some kind of
people
fruit.
At this event.
Oh, God. Anyway, if today's episode makes you laugh or scream, do us a favor and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. A 5-star review is the easiest way to help us grow our audience and this community. Thank you. And because you're in charge of what you listen to on your Spotify and Apple, you have your own veto power. So if you get sick of us, skip to the next episode.
The JoJo heads are real pissed with us right now. Yeah.
You just lost so many people up top.
I know.
I hope you're proud of yourself.
She does it to us every week.
I know. And I do understand the irony of me telling anybody to calm down or turn down the volume, because I'm sure there are many people that feel the same about me sitting in my basement with heart sunglasses. But yeah.
You have on heart sunglasses bigger than most of your face, and it is 9:22 in the morning.
Well, that's so we don't see the bags. She says it's a gimmick, but I'm on to her.
He saw me in real life this past weekend.
So a little background information about that movie. It was written by Carol Heikkinen, who also wrote Chelsea's least favorite movie of all time, Center Stage.
Oh, I like this so much better than Center Stage. And like, not like I even hate Center Stage, because I did used to dance and it was the first time I fell in love with Zoe Saldana. Mm. But this is way better than Center Stage.
I think it's just different, Katrina.
Yeah?
Because I love both.
Okay,
yeah.
Fair enough. I don't hate Center Stage. I just like this a lot better. But yeah. I'll rewatch.
I will not be rewatching Center Stage ever again.
It was directed, however, by Alan Moyle, who wrote two of my favorite films, the MTV movie about statutory pregnancy, Jailbait, and the 2004 TV movie about Michael Jackson, Man in the Mirror. Art.
Wow, what a career trajectory to go from this to statutory pregnancy on MTV.
I filmed it on VHS and watched it once a week.
Well, I only get it because it's like Empire Records is the meld of the two things he liked, which is music and teen drama. Like, that kind of makes it make more sense.
Yeah, this is the middle of that Venn diagram.
Exactly.
So the budget, I had to look at about 3 times when I wrote it down because I thought I was missing zeros somewhere. It cost $151,000 to make.
What?
Yeah, and brought in $273,000. And I was like, surely this must be million. But I checked multiple places and no, it's just thousand.
Was it not in theaters a long time, or was it something that we fell in love with after?
We must have fell in love with it after, because I was 9 in 1995 and I don't think I was 9 watching
I think
this.
I was
like 13.
I was about to say, whenever it came to Comedy Central is probably when I started being okay. But like, anything that came to TV was when I started getting to watch cool things.
I don't think I watched this until college, like my freshman year of college, because I famously didn't watch like any movies growing up, and this was definitely one that was like introduced to me in some guy's dorm room over, you know, the devil's lettuce or something, and I was like, I could be these people. But I guess also it was 1995, so inflation. But we've covered movies, certainly millions existed in the
okay, 90s. Yeah. Right. I was going to say, I'm not good at that, but that still seems low.
And I wonder if, because of like the kind of movie it is, I wonder if it was like an art house movie where it wasn't even at AMC.
That's what I was thinking. Like, where did it show? Or like, maybe it just wasn't in theaters a long time. But I mean, they made their money back, but they also spent almost nothing making it. So.
I want to know what Liv Tyler and Renee Zellweger's paychecks were.
You're so...
Like, how did they get less than $151,000 each?
Well, what did... I wonder what Liv had done before this besides, like, her dad's music videos. Because I was thinking the same thing when I saw it. I was like, wait, that's was true. This her first, like, full length?
It might have been. Because Roger Ebert, who I'm going to segue to right now anyway, he gave it 1.5 stars. But in it, he like really tore the movie apart. But he did say the best part about the movie is Liv Tyler and Ethan Embry, who he thought would go on to have great careers. Raj had his finger on the pulse. He knew what the people wanted. But Roger did say, Empire Records is one of those stores you can only find in the movies, where customers can be put on hold while the employees stage a mock funeral for the troubled Deborah, followed by a group therapy session. And the ending is a mess.
Okay.
Roger clearly never ate at Gump Shrimp Company when you were the manager.
I was about to say, I've absolutely both worked and been a patron in stores where you're like, who's on the floor? Like, no one's working. And I did write that down at one point when Mark is like, someone help me. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. Like, what is going on in the front of the store right now?
Yeah. Anybody who's worked retail has worked in this exact situation before.
Yes. Like, all the dressing rooms are full and you can't find anyone. Yeah. Definitely been there.
And now, not to make myself sound like in my day, but now they're like on phones on the floor. They're on the sales floor, but they're on their phone. So it's like they're not there. Like, I see you.
Oh, there's a coffee shop near me that anytime I go to order there, I feel like a dork in high school trying to like interject in a conversation. Like, they are so on their phones and into each other that to order, you have to be like, oh, excuse me, could I just, like, they're all just, like, way too cool, Gen Z, and it's very funny to be like, I immediately regress. It's like, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Do whatever you're doing. I'll just be
Can
here.
Can I, you know what? I'll make my own coffee.
Yeah. Like, I don't get annoyed. I immediately am like, oh, no, you win. If I could just have a scone whenever you get a moment. Like...
So there's three taglines this week, and I want you to choose which one you'd wait in line to meet, which one you'd rock and roll while it ate a salad, and which one you'd hold at gunpoint. So the first one, nice. The first one is, they're selling music, but not selling out.
Gunpoint.
I'll rock out with that one.
Okay. The next one is, this music is the glue of the world. It holds it all together.
Gunpoint.
Katrina.
I guess I'll wait in line to meet it.
Okay. So then the next one, open till midnight.
Oh, yeah, I'll wait in line.
And I'm fine to rock and roll with that.
Yeah,
I like it. Open till midnight.
So I have two bits of trivia I want to go to. First of all, the original cut of this movie takes place on 2 days instead of one, is 40 minutes longer, and has three other main characters. But when they did the final cut for the movie, they just cut those three characters out, which shaves off 40 minutes.
Three whole people? 40 minutes is a long time. I want to see the Snyder cut of Empire Records.
Me too.
We cover suicide. We cover pills. It's like, what were those other three people doing?
Apparently, Warren's sister comes to pick him up, and then she's there for a while. I don't know.
Honestly, Warren having anyone in his family be present would have made something make a little bit more sense. Because I was like, he keeps getting out of custody and back at the store. And he's a child. Like, what's happening?
It was insane. That was the craziest thing of this movie. And again, we have a mock funeral. And then the second bit of trivia I have is Robin Tooney shaved her head for real in the bathroom scene. So then when she filmed The Craft, she had to wear a wig the whole
time. Which I did read that. And I was like, that's why her hair, because it looks like a wig in The Craft. It's like pretty wavy. And I didn't know if it was because of the hair color. Like always, I was like, I wonder if it was just because they wanted her to have that like strawberry blonde. But yeah, it's because she had no hair at all.
Bald headed. So now, what character, if any, do you identify
with? I think growing up, I loved Deb. But now I'm probably Mark. Because I'm like the stoner dork, but also responsible. Like, I absolutely would have been the one in the in front of the store being like, where is everyone?
Yeah, the only one working.
Yeah, right. But also being like constantly dismissed as a burnout and hallucinating a little bit every once in a while. Like
a little bit. Yeah.
I'm definitely Mark.
I do think that I have Joe tendencies in terms of wanting to help people and fix people, but ultimately just like creating my own chaos. But, and I wonder if this other character is one of the ones that got cut. I'm also the guy that brings everybody pot brownies because I take my mixtapes very seriously. And I also have bad teeth. I really felt a kindred spirit with him. I loved how he was like, no, you got to listen to this this way through. It covers the classics. Like anytime I make a Spotify playlist, I act like I'm solving cancer.
You're sick.
I know.
I think I am a mix of Corey and Mark because I'm high strung, emotional, a little unhinged when it comes to like romantic relationship prospects. Okay. But also I'm chaos personified and a joy to work with. So, Katrina, now is the time. We're going to give you 1 minute on the clock. Give us a little synopsis.
Oh, okay. I think that my synopsis for this would be failed drummer opens a musical halfway house. Because this is a detention center. Like, this is a shelter for wayward youth that happens to have CDs in it. I get so annoyed with him at times where I'm like, why isn't he more mad? And then by the end, you're like, oh, because he loves orphans. Like, that's the only reason he wouldn't be like, I'm calling the cops and filing an insurance claim and just like doing this over again. You have to care about these kids or like none of this would, you would just be like, oh, you're awful tiny people. And I'm washing my hands of this whole situation.
That really sums it up.
Yeah. Put that on the back of the DVD or the VHS, but it won't skip because there's no butts in this movie.
No butts.
Like what you're hearing? Head to patreon.com/IamTheCuteOne for more.
There you can find uncut, unedited, and unhinged video and audio footage of current episodes.
That's patreon.com/IamTheCuteOne. See you there.
Lucas is working the closing shift of Empire Records for the first time.
I'm so sorry. I've done it again.
Every week!
I know. I don't even let Donnie get through the first sentence. I just have to make a comment really quick about Lucas's hair. And I don't even think I'm making this comment to either of you. This is for the cuties listening, because I know Donnie's not watching The Valley. Katrina, do you watch Bravo shows? Have you been watching The Valley?
No. What is that?
Okay. It's the new spinoff prequel kind of that has like Jax Taylor and Brittany Cartwright, and it's a hot mess in I can't tell a good way or a bad way yet, but Lucas's hair is like Brittany's friend, who I don't even know his name, but anybody who watches The Valley will know who I'm talking about. His wig starts, the hairline starts at the eyebrows. He looks like Shrek in human form, and I can't stop thinking about this man's wig, and clearly it's transcended because as soon as I was watching Empire Records, I immediately thought of that man again. Again, don't know his name, but do know his wig quite well.
And you knew that the two people you were talking to, you wouldn't know shit what you were saying, but you still found
I needed it to say it, or I wouldn't have been able to focus on anything else. I needed I to purge, it. So here I am. Go on, finish that first sentence.
The cuties are like, she's so right.
There's at least one person out there that's like, yes.
So I'll say the first sentence again.
Go ahead.
And then look around, make sure no one cuts me off. Lucas is working the closing shift of Empire Records for the first time. And while that's a big responsibility, his manager Joe's rules are simple. Count the money twice, don't touch his beer, cigars, or drumsticks. And so Lucas does all three before digging through Joe's desk and learning that Music Town Records wants to buy them out and turn their store into part of their franchise. So Lucas does what any person in love with their place of employment would do, take all the money in the safe and head to Atlantic City to gamble with it to save the place he works and the jobs of all his friends. But when the snake eyes are rolled, he loses all the money in one shot.
Ooh. There are multiple times where I just have a bullet point that says, is Lucas autistic? Like, I can't tell if he's autistic or sociopathic because he's like devoid of emotion or worry or concern, but he clearly cares about Joe, but he also possibly has a gambling problem. Like, he walks into Atlantic City and people know him. It's like, how often does he do this? I had so many questions right off
the bat. There's no urgency to try to get it back or to try to like make the money up or like to even acknowledge that like, oh, maybe Joe did have a plan behind the scenes and I just totally fucked it up. But this is a guy who clearly has been rescued by Joe and has never actually faced consequences because he's like, oh, it'll be fine. Joe's not going to fire me.
Right.
And he's right.
He is right. But I would be slinging pole in the parking lot trying to make that money
up. Well, what Chelsea just said, the last, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes of the movie are what the whole movie should have been.
Yeah.
They do so many things that are not trying to make this money back for upwards of 8 hours, I would say.
Like, because even if you don't have that little fundraiser thing that they have at the end, you are not a franchise. Just like make everything double price for one day.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. It's like you have a PA system that
yeah.
apparently covers the whole block because Renee Zellweger like does a play-by-play of a two-man chase at one point from inside the store. But like, yeah, they could have been making announcements all day.
Yeah.
But this is why Joe has the problems he has, because he just like goes around stomping all day, hating Rex Manning Day instead of trying to come up with solutions.
He just loves too much.
And he's paying him. Lucas comes in. He's clearly paying this guy his salary and he's sitting on
that.
A couch all day.
No, Lucas is getting docked for today. Here's the thing also I thought is that is Lucas's home. Like him and Joe maybe live together somewhere, but like he could sleep on that couch all the time.
That's true.
But like maybe him closing was like, whatever, I'll see you in the morning. He would have slept there anyway kind of thing.
Oh, it's like Sean from Boy Meets World and that motorcycle teacher.
Oh my God, I love Sean Hunter so much.
I do too.
Mother Mary.
Sean and Angelo, right?
Yes.
I always want to say Angelica, and I'm like, that's not right. That's an evil child on Rugrats. Sean and Angela is another giant glaring, like, you're bi, you're bi, you're bi, you're bi sign that I just missed. Because that was, I think, a sexual awakening for me, that relationship.
The only reason that I thought I would ever find love was Sean dating Angela. I was like, oh, I have a chance. Like, a white trash white boy will fall in love with me. And I was right.
This is not about Sean and Angela. This is, unfortunately, about this Atlantic City scene. I've never been gambling in Atlantic City, but I do love the Atlantic City Boardwalk because it's the closest Rainforest Cafe to me. Now, we are recording this, cuties, on April 2nd. And I need to tell you, if you didn't see my stories, I fucking hate April Fool's Day because media outlets have just taken to think they can write whatever headline they want, but the headlines are always so niche that they only bother me. Like, who cares if Rugrats is going to be a Broadway show? Nobody except for me. Who cares if we're getting a Pretty Little Liars video game? Nobody except for me. So these fake headlines that they think is going to make people not excited, that's just going to be like, oh, silly. No, it pisses me off when I find out they're not
real. It's always something you actually want.
Yes!
You know how they say that Valentine's Day is like the Hallmark holiday for, you know, big cards to sell or whatever?
Uh-huh.
I love the idea that April Fool's was created by your NSA agent to just fuck with you specifically. Like, let me collect data about Donnie's hopes and dreams and then just dash them on April 1st.
It truly is. They're always so niche. So this is the one that got me this year. And by got me, I don't mean it fooled me. They never fool me. I'm not tricked for a second. But I know to go through life not hoping for these things. So then when April Fool's Day even puts the idea in my head, then I'm pissed I don't get it. But the Empire State Building posted that Rainforest Cafe is going to build a rooftop bar on the Empire State Building.
Stop.
And again, I knew it wasn't real, but there's nothing I want.
But like, don't plant that seed if you're not going to give me a Rainforest Cafe.
Thank you. And then people were coming in my DMs because I clearly wrote how mad I was about this. People came in my DMs and they were like, the real joke is that Rainforest Cafe even still exists. So I want to say fuck you to those people that said that. Fuck you to the Empire State Building social media team. And fuck you to the person who invented April Fool's Day.
And I love you, Rainforest Cafe.
Sponsor us.
Okay. Well, I'm so sorry for your loss of the potential Empire State Rainforest Cafe collab that we missed out on. I've never been to Atlantic City either, but Dr. Bald, my husband, not a medical doctor, just a man that went bald at 22, his brother's bachelor party was in Atlantic City, and I helped Dr. Bald plan for it. And I actually was the one that found the hotel that they stayed in. I was like, oh my God, this is an amazing deal. It's on the main strip, like really cheap. And I was like, awesome, great. So they booked the place and they get there and they realize it had been ravaged by Hurricane Sandy and never fixed. They just were like, well, I guess we'll open our doors again. So they check in. One of the rooms literally had a hole in the ceiling and it was raining. They could see the sky and it was a rainy day and it was raining into the hotel room. Another two guys checked into their room and it had been robbed. Like, they walked in, there was no bed, there was no dresser, there was no desk.
Like, it had been cleaned out.
Cleaned out, yeah.
But I was like, robbed of what? There's no way there.
They even took the Bible. No, it was an empty room. So they go down to the front desk. The response to, we have an empty room, it looks like somebody robbed you of your furniture. The front desk lady's response was, she went, not again.
Who's taking full beds and you're missing them?
Right. Like, do we not have some sort of security camera?
They blew away.
If I had checked into that place, I'd be like, okay, where's the closest Airbnb? Right. These guys are a little bit rowdy. And they were like, fuck yeah, this means we can do whatever we want in these hotel rooms this weekend. Like, if we're staying in a place with a literal skylight, we can do whatever we want.
Yeah.
Like, everybody who went on this bachelor party says it was, like, the greatest time. Some of them hooked up with strippers. A lot of them lost, like, a lot of money.
Lost a lot of money, but then they sold a dresser before they left. So they kind of broke even.
So while Joe tries to locate Lucas and the money, the next morning, the other employees are preparing for Rex Manning Day, which includes setting up the store, the glue-obsessed AJ planning to tell Corey he loves her by 1:37, and Corey planning to lose her virginity to rock star Rex Manning. And while the employees mostly get along, there are some scuffles because they're teenagers in the same location. But mostly they just argue about quarters glued to the ground and deciding on which music to play. When Lucas finally shows up, Joe shows restraint by not kicking his ass and instead tells him to shut up and not move from a couch in the stockroom. Now, we talked about Joe being the good equivalent of Miss Hannigan, but he needs a special seat in heaven because I would jump off the roof of Empire Records.
Like, I kind of am mad at him for not communicating more clearly how awful this is.
Yeah.
But I feel like Lucas doesn't seem to like understand the true ramifications of his actions to the point where I wanted him to at some point be like, if this store goes away, it's your fault. Like, I know that you meant well and you thought that you were gonna like swoop in and save the day by yourself, but the opposite happens. And so if this is closed tomorrow, like, it's all on you. And he like doesn't ever seem to grasp that, because like you said, he's constantly just like, it'll work out, but it doesn't work out because of anything he does.
No.
He tries one thing, screws everything up, and then just sits back and is like, it'll work out. He doesn't start the fundraiser. Like, he isn't really a big part of fixing any of the problem he created.
No, Lucas does not have Ferris Bueller energy where it's like, I'm going to manifest this. Okay, I fucked up, but it's fine because I'm going to get it back tenfold.
Yeah.
He doesn't even tell Joe about it. He waits until Joe goes into the safe and is like, where the fuck is the money?
Yep.
And he's like, circulating Atlantic City. Oopsie kitty.
That was another time where I was like, oh, he's autistic because he's not afraid. I can't tell if he's autistic, a sociopath, or magic. Because that's, I feel like, the only other way you could be that matter of fact about like, oh, it's going to work out. Either you are devoid of reality and like full of yourself and your world that you just think everything will work out for you and everyone that you care about. Or you know it's gonna work because
you're like the Santa Claus in a Hallmark movie.
The Bagger Vance of Empire Records. Yeah, I was like, I don't understand how you're not disappointed with yourself or I don't know, something.
And in your theory, autistic sociopath or magic, he like speaks to the camera often.
Him and Mark both do. And I feel like
Mark
does it because he's like tripping so hard that they allow him to think he's in his own movie, inside
us.
A movie.
Yeah.
Exactly. I did at one point. I was like, why are they letting Mark do this? I was like, I guess just because he's that weird that they were like, Mark can do it. But you're right. It's like, he's the only other person that's like, don't worry, guys. And you're like, you suck.
And also, how little do you think of Joe that you think that he might not have a plan?
At all. You were like, I saw a mock-up of a new sign and clearly all of this is up to me now.
Again, if I was Joe, I would fire everybody on the spot. Every day would just be me handing out pink papers.
The turnover at Empire Records is out of control.
It would just be me. Because the next person I would fire is Deb. Because while Deb shaves her head and the others find out about her self-harm.
Donnie says, mental health crisis? Fuck you. You're fired.
No, fix it at home. Joe... Joe, I'm not paying you for this. Joe informs his employees that he was going to be a partner with the intention of buying the other share out eventually so they could stay Empire Records. But after Lucas's stunt, they'll officially be turned into Music Town after all. Now, I do love Empire Records, the store itself. I love the movie, but I love the store itself. And I am so mad that I did not begin my New York tourist adventure until after the Virgin Megastore was closed down. I always wanted to go so bad.
That would be fantastic.
I love a record store the same way I love a bookstore. Like, it isn't until I go to one that I'm like, oh, right, this was like my happy place as a child and a teenager. Yep.
Yeah.
The way Empire Records looks reminds me of Amoeba in LA, which now they have books and everything, but there's like floors and stairs. And it's like you're saying, Chelsea, like bookstore, I think, is even older and like the smell's different. But yes, music stores that are like that have like such an edgy whimsy to them.
It was Urban Outfitters adjacent.
Yes.
Which I love. Yep. I could hang out in an Urban Outfitters all day.
When I was 13, we went to New Orleans for a family trip and I went to the Urban Outfitters there that's like, you know, reconstruction from an old building. And I told my mom, I was like, I never want to be anywhere else. I just want to live in this Urban Outfitters. Like, this is who I am. I'm never leaving.
Especially in the era of those graphic tees that were like a pig saying, don't eat me. Why? I don't know, but it's all I want
to
wear.
My favorite one was the state of Idaho, like the shape, which I've never been to Idaho. I'm not from Idaho. And it said, Idaho, no Utaho. So stupid. I was 14. And my mom bought it for me.
Oh, okay. Like, get it, girl.
How kind. C is for crunk. I really liked. I had that one. And the letters were velvet. And then Jesus is my homeboy was a staple.
I remember a girl in my high school was the first one to have Mary is my homegirl. And everyone freaked out.
Yeah.
And she would not tell people where she bought it. And it was the funniest thing.
Our first gatekeeping
girl. Like, she walked up at like 7:45 a.m. Everyone freaks out and is like, oh my God, I love your shirt. Where'd you get it? And she was like, I'm not telling anyone because I don't want everyone to have it. And it was that kind of thing where everyone was like, and then she just didn't tell us. And I was like, oh wow, she's for real, for real. This is fantastic.
I was
Baptist, so I didn't care, but hilarious. Oh, yeah. Also, sorry I said white trash earlier. Underprivileged youth.
Oh.
No. I say white trash.
And you're in good company. Both of us are white trash. Yeah. We identify as white trash.
Well, yeah, I was like, the person I'm talking to also identifies that way, but I know it's not the best thing to say.
If you want to watch yourself, you can say wrong side of the tracks. We know what that means. This episode is sponsored by OneSkin. Cuties, there is nothing like the feeling of being confident in your own skin. That's why I have to tell you about today's sponsor, OneSkin. The products make it easy to keep your skin healthy while looking and feeling your best. There's no complicated routine, no multiple-step protocols, just simple, scientifically validated solutions. Now, cuties, maybe you've seen it in my Instagram stories. Maybe you hear me talk any single day. But there is a certain demographic that looks old. I'm talking about the guy that talks about food on Instagram, or that group of people sitting on the train in front of me going to a 25-year high school reunion, but instead it turned out they were turning 26 years old next week. Like, why do you look so old? I don't know. And I refuse to join the party. And that is why I use OneSkin. Their face, eye, body, and shield can all be used with other products and easily fit into your current skincare routine. Top tier products. And OneSkin's secret is their proprietary OS1 peptide. It's the first ingredient proven to switch off the aging cells that cause lines, wrinkles, and thinning skin. And they've got several studies to back it up. I've been using their products for a while now, and I am hooked. My friend gave me a free product about a year ago, and I truly use it every single day. I've been a loyal customer since. But don't just take my word for it. OneSkin has over 4,000 five-star reviews, and were recognized by Fast Company as one of the most innovative brands in 2024. And for a limited time, cuties, you'll get an exclusive 15% off your first OneSkin purchase using the code CUTEONE when you check out at OneSkin.co. Try OneSkin and enjoy younger, healthier skin without all the extra steps. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code CUTEONE at OneSkin.co. That is 15% off OneSkin.co with code CUTEONE. After you purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. So say no more, Mona Moore. Rex Manning has arrived, and he is as much of a piece of shit as anyone would assume. Talking down to his assistant until she quits on the spot, demanding bottled water and a better chair. But don't fret, Joe has his drums to distract him, which AJ and Lucas blast through the store using speakerphone. Now listen. I love a good speakerphone. When I worked at Bubba Shrimp Company as the bookkeeper, there were two phones with speakerphones in my office, and they had multiple lines. So I used to do two things with it. Number one, I would call one phone from the other, both in my office. I would call one phone from the other and then put it on speakerphone so I could use it as a karaoke machine so it would blast through the other phone.
Stop. So one phone is picking up the song.
Yes.
That's so funny. They're like, is someone singing Total Eclipse of the Heart in this Bubba Cup? What is going on?
Yes. Yes, they are. And then I would use that same technique with no music and just pretend I was a flight attendant so that I could hear it come through the speaker and say, hello, ladies and gentlemen, on today's flight.
You would be a great flight attendant.
I always thought so. This is me speaking for the rights of flight attendants. They don't get paid until they're in the air. If there's like a storm and they're stuck there for 2 hours or whatever, they're not paid.
Shut up.
That's why I never applied.
Oh my gosh. That's so messed up.
Corey begs to be the one to bring Rex's lunch, where she strips for him until he offers to let her blow him while he eats a salad. Humiliated, she runs to the roof where AJ's waiting to confess his love for her. And when she's not in the right headspace to hear it, she tells him that being best friends is better than any romantic relationship they could have. And he does not agree. But enough about them. I need to backtrack to this rock and roll thing that Rex Manning says when he wants her to blow him. I dated a singer once, and not a famous singer. This is not like me telling you I fucked Lenny Kravitz. No, he was an aspiring singer.
They all are, aren't they?
When it was time for me to do that, he used to unzip his pants and say, sing into the mic.
Farfaroni.
The fact that either of you could maintain an erection through that is nothing short of a miracle.
I do need you to know my type is like sleazy. Like my number one type is a man that would call me a faggot in an alley somewhere.
I'm learning this about you.
Lots to unpack. Certainly not today. Don't have enough time.
Oh my goodness. We'll do a separate episode for movie men that Dottie would date.
So I didn't hate it when he said sing into the mic. But in hindsight, it like does make me throw up. Now, if Lenny Kravitz said it to me, I would do it in a second.
I feel like even if Lenny Kravitz said it, I would be like, Lenny, we're both better than this.
Well, you're normal. I'm not. I would eat it up. Literally. I would say, like, I'm singing.
Me.
Let me do my warm up.
The thing that bothers me the most is that it doesn't make sense. You should be saying that to him because he's the aspiring singer.
I know.
You know, like mic check, 1-2-1-2.
Think about that. It's like, yeah, what do you care about people singing into your mic?
Don't force your interests on me.
This sexual analogy doesn't even add up.
I always assumed it was like a Beyonce concert, though, when she like gives her mic to someone else.
Oh,
she
okay.
She ain't no diva. Like that.
That I would accept if he took out his heartbeat into just when she ain't no diva. Oh, but also Rex Manning is a dick the entire time she's in that room with him.
Yeah.
So I was kind of surprised that like that was what finally got, because it's like he's not interested in anything she's saying before that. She's being super hot. She's like dropping all the right cues. She's got all her lines, like, I'm old enough or whatever she says. Like, she's got all her stuff. And he's not responding to any of that. It's like, you should have felt awkward before you took your skirt off.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And like him unzipping his pants and being a jerk is obviously the icing on top. But it was like, he was kind of being a dick the whole time you've been in this room. Like, nothing he said before that would have made me want to keep going. Because I was like, oh, this guy kind of hates me.
Yeah. And I hate that I'm telling on myself, though, but I do think there are elements of this movie that totally nail the teenage experience. And like, I've been in similar situations, not with like an aging, decrepit pop star, but like where there are glaring red flags the entire time, but you already have it in your mind, like, oh, I'm going to be this type of girl, or like, this is going to be my moment to do X, Y, and Z. The thing I liked was that she did have that like straw that broke the camel's back and was like, I'm getting the fuck out of here. Because there have certainly been times where I'm like, well, like the sunken fallacy effect of like, I guess this is what we're doing.
Yeah, you're right. No, I am glad she runs out. But I can see that too, where like you're just so set on your picture of the way something's supposed to go that like all of the reality is just blowing past you.
Yeah, but rock and roll.
Gross. They did such a good job making him just like the ultimate cheese.
He looks like Austin Powers.
He does. Like the satin, the tassels. Yeah. They did such a good job.
Yeah, of like making him from another era.
Yeah. Corey's reign of terror doesn't end with AJ, because when Gina tries to make her feel better by saying she'll find another guy, Corey calls her a slut. But Gina's got some tricks of her own, because after guessing his underwear color, she's naked with Rex Manning in the office.
And I was team Gina at first. Like, okay. I was team slut, because she wasn't doing anything wrong. Like, she was trying to be supportive of Corey, and it was only when Corey felt embarrassed that she lashed out. It's like, you were fine and supportive, and I hate that. I hate when people are supportive of people until it serves them to talk shit or be judgmental, because it's like, where was this energy when I was telling you about my hookup the other night? Mm-hmm. But I just famously love sluts in general. I've really tried so hard to have a whore era. Like, I wanted in college, there was a year where I was like, this is the year of me being a slut. And I just don't have the genetic makeup for it, because I ended up, every guy I hooked up with, even if I didn't like him, I ended up like dating him for several months. And it was just like, I didn't understand how to just have a one night stand. And I'd be like, oh, I gotta hang out with this guy again. And my friends were like, you don't. Why are you dating him?
I'm kind of similar, where like I was younger and was like, I'm gonna be really cool and like make out with like a bunch of guys and all. And then I was just like, I'm just making friends that have seen my tits. That's all I'm doing. I'm just friends with all of these guys now. Like, I don't think this is the way this is supposed to work. But I feel like Corey, even when she says during the funeral, where she's like, you're so brave, you're not afraid to be who you are, even if part of her was judging her, the other part of her was like, but she's not afraid to do it. I'm afraid to do everything. Mm-hmm. I was a little bit mad at Gina, but I also could tell that like she really got her feelings hurt.
Yeah.
Like even her sleeping with Rex, it wasn't because she liked Rex at all. Obviously, she just wanted to hurt her friend back, which is immature or whatever. But you could tell that like it really hurt her, the stuff that she said when they were sitting at lunch.
Yeah. And that's the kind of person I am. Like, if you think this about me anyway, I'll prove you right. Yeah. I do fuck everybody, including the man you wanted to.
Yeah. The way Donnie stopped smiling just for that little bit scared me, where it was like, oh we're going to do this? Okay. It's like, oh, God.
Because it is how I am.
That's and
it,
like, scary.
It channeled me. Sickening.
We play fight constantly on this podcast, but I never want to be on that man's actual bad side. Good God, he would ruin me.
And that's why my dad doesn't like me, because when he used to try to teach me how to play sports, he would be like, you're so bad at this. So then I did bad on purpose. I'm like, I'll show you what being bad at sports is.
It's like, old fart. You thought it was bad before. I'm going to run to third base first.
Naked. Things come to a head when AJ plays Rex's song on the loudspeaker and the customers have fun. I don't know how we get here, but that's the catalyst and shit goes down from there.
This song made people so horny.
Feral. They went feral.
This is the first time I was like, oh, Rex Manning Day is even valid, because it was like older ladies are coming in. He doesn't really want to be here, but then he puts on this song and I was like, oh, his music does something to people.
Yeah. an orgy happen. And then as the orgy's happening, Joe is whooping Lucas's ass, AJ whoops Rex Manning's ass, and then everyone tells Rex Manning they hate him and that he can't sing. But the fun ain't over, because Mark overeats special brownies and hallucinates that he's in that music video from hell. As that's happening, Gina has a meltdown and tells everyone about Corey's addiction to speed, which leads to an exorcism in the middle of the sales floor.
They let that go on for so
too long.
They let her throw pills at a crying girl for like a good 90 seconds before anyone that isn't bawling intervenes. Like, they're all just watching this go down.
Yeah, and yeah. This is when Joe's hands-off parenting style. It's like, okay, this isn't working across many avenues. Like, maybe we do need to intervene. But that guar music video, I don't know if any cuties out there are from Richmond, Virginia, but my friends took me to Guar Bar in downtown RVA. It is a themed, so everything in that music video, imagine a bar with that.
Oh my God.
That was like our nightcap as we went there, and we took several tequila shots. It was quite possibly one of the drunkest nights I've ever had. And I'm like looking around, I'm already like spinning. I have the spins, and then there's like demon masks staring at me. And I was like, I need to get out of here.
Guar is scary.
Scary.
If these people didn't have real things to do, they all find time to throw Deb a funeral in the back room during store hours. I have to repeat that. During store hours.
On the clock.
On the clock. We don't pay you to do this. And social media accounts, we don't pay you to make fake headlines on April Fool's Day. Like, this is all things that should not be happening. But at the funeral, they tell her how they feel about her and about how they feel about each other. So Gina and Corey make up. Lucas admits to pissing the bed until Joe came into his life. Deb confesses her attempt at self-harm. And Gina reveals she wants to be in a band, and she knows she stands in her own way by never auditioning.
I would love to have my own funeral. I do think that if I were to ever get sick, cancel clear, but like if I knew the end was nigh, I would want to be present. Like, I would want people to be able to say all the nice things that they're going to say about me. Why can't I hear that shit?
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's so fucked up that we wait until people literally can't hear us to say things that we like about them. So I would 100%, I'd sit in like a throne at the front instead of a casket, because, you know, still alive. And I'd be like, all right, tell me how great I am. And yeah, I would be pissed if somebody started talking about like, oh, I wish I was an artist. Oh, I want to go to art school. I'd be like, hey, listen, bitch, this is my day. This is my funeral.
For Deb to open an eye and be like, am I the suicidal one or not? What are we doing?
Yeah. I'm going to steal your idea, Chelsea, and Deb's idea, actually, because you just stole her idea. Uh-huh. But I'm going to steal both of your idea, but I'm going to make everyone wear a shock collar. And if they talk about themselves, I press a button.
Ooh, love
like
that.
Enough, let's remember why we're here.
I mean, I'm on board. Normalize Tom Sawyer. Hear what your friends really think about you before it's too late.
Yeah, mandatory. And if that wasn't enough, while all of this is happening, a shoplifter is in and out of the store. And when he returns finally with a gun, he gets an honorary name tag, since all he really wants out of his life is a job at Empire Records.
And we talk to...
When we get there, no, Chelsea, say the same thing as me, because it's like, how did we get to, oh, is that what all of this is about, Warren?
Also, what? It's like we've talked about Joe's overall business plan. I've expressed my concern. I know that he has a soft spot for these kids, but can we not enroll in like a night business class? Can we not maybe try something else? Because clearly you have a name for yourself now. If this kid is like, I know how to get a job, let me wave this gun around. As soon as that gun came out, because it had been a while since I had seen this movie, and as soon as that gun came out, I was like, oh, yep, this is the first interview, and he's nailed it. He's going to get the audition. Like, what the fuck?
I feel like this town's kind of small, the way that Gene even talks about bands and stuff like that. So yeah, is it like everyone knows that Empire Records kids are like, even the way he kind of is like, you think you're so cool, it's like, does everyone know that the kids that you hate, like, this kid thinks they're so cool, I can't stand them when they come into Dairy Queen, but they work at Empire Records, and that gives you some kind of like town clout?
No,
I was trying to figure out the culture,
because besides AJ, Corey, and Gina, the rest don't seem like popular kids.
From the wrong side of the tracks, if you will.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
They are.
I think the right side of the tracks in that town is very small. Like, I think the right side of the tracks in this town is one block, and then the rest is all the wrong side.
The only way to get on the other side of the tracks here seems to be to leave, because I don't know what's going to happen to any of these people in, like, 20 years.
No. Okay, the movie is coming to an end. And while the news stations are reporting the crime of Warren and the gun, Mark tells the news crews that there will be a fundraiser that night to save the Empire. And soon, the store is full of dedicated customers. The owner of Music Town sells the store to Joe. Corey tells AJ she loves him, and he tells her he's going to art school in Boston to be near her. And Gina sings on the roof. Now listen, I love when she sings on the roof. I get full body chills. Yes!
She only sings like this.
But I'm okay with it. I get full body chills. I feel proud of her in the way that, like, you'd be proud of a friend for doing this. I know that's nuts, but I don't care. And then they don't have this version on Spotify where she sings along. They only have the real version. Oh. But whenever it comes on, and it always comes on when I'm coming home from work, like, late at night in my little headphones. Usually it's raining.
So you're peeing all over the place.
No, I don't have to, because instead I pretend to be her. So it keeps the streets clear because it's raining. So then I have the streets to sing as my own karaoke bar. So then when it gets to the part where she comes in, I love when people are hesitant to sing and then sing. So I always sing out loud in the streets of New York. I say, I far and wide, like that. And people next to me are probably like autistic or sociopath.
I was just picturing you doing the, you take the lead and be like, what? No.
I do it, Katrina. I do the whole thing, including
that. Oh, my God.
I love this
song. But it does make me, what you were saying about, like, feeling like a friend, when they're looking up at her and smiling, yeah. It did, like, make me emotional in that way where you're, like, proud of your friend. And also when Mark's on the news and he just yells, damn, the man saved the Empire. I almost cried. I felt that. I was like, wow, I really love this movie.
It's moving.
It got me.
Final thoughts. If we were to make this movie today, who would you cast, or what would the plot to a sequel be? And I can go first because I only did a couple of them. So Joe, I had Jeremy Allen, whoever, Lip Gallagher, who's on The Bear.
Uh-huh.
Corey, I have Ariana Greenblatt. She was the girl in Barbie. I put Bridget Jones. The Bridget Jones character, Kiernan Shipka. And then the only other person I cast was Rex Manning. And I think Bradley Cooper. Like, imagine a really, like, shiny, tanned Bradley Cooper. I think
that's, like, who Bradley Cooper thinks he is, kind of.
Yeah. That's Bradley Cooper as a director. He's like, how much screen time can I
have?
That's
perfect.
Yeah, that's
trying to pick a Deb. I would love to pick a Deb for now, but I don't know. I don't know if there's anybody that I love being dark enough right now.
I think Zendaya could do it.
And that's who I was thinking of, but it's like, she could do it, but I don't want her to do it. I want someone like gnarlier than her to do it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Because even Liv Tyler, I wrote at one point, I was like, I know Liv Tyler is charming because I should be more mad that she's the nerd. She's the nerd. This statuesque, beautiful, perfect person is the only like, at one point she's like, you're a nerd. She goes, I know. And I was like, fuck you.
At least they didn't give her glasses.
Yeah. Oh.
And she takes off and everybody's like, wait, she's hot?
Oh my gosh.
I said I want a sequel, like 2010-ish is when it would take place. All the same cast, so they'll just play like 13 years younger, I guess. And it's when Empire Records closes for real because record stores aren't like needed anymore. So then they all come back because it was such an important time of their lives. But we see where they are now and how things changed, etc.
Obsessed. So like Empire Records now and then.
Yes!
Love that.
I love it.
So final thoughts. What about this movie aged well and what aged like blockbuster?
So for this, and this kind of jumps off of what I said for the sequel, I think music stores like this don't exist anymore. So I think, like, if a Gen Zer were to turn on whatever, Amazon Prime, and see this movie for the first time, I don't think they can relate because they don't feel the vibe in that way that we
They
did.
Would see the sound booth and be like, what? What are they doing in there? Yeah.
I'm surprised not everybody in the 90s had lice. That we were just willy-nilly going into record stores and putting on
those
squishy
headphones.
Yeah, and they had the things to wipe it down, but nobody was doing that.
No one that had lice was was using them. Yeah. Like the clean people were, and then all the grungy dudes were like definitely not wiping anything down.
I think the parts that age well, like they do capture teenage angst so yes. well. Yeah. They do talk about mental health and they don't nope. trivialize it. Like they nope. do address like, oh, this wasn't an attention seeking thing. This girl is really going through it. Yep. Also the fact that Warren was able to obtain a gun so easily, unfortunately yeah. does hold up in today's
Stop!
Society
so
of gun control. The blockbuster part, there was like any 80s or 90s film we cover, just so much casual homophobia thrown in as a punchline. And I do love the overall premise of like shopping small and sticking it to the man. But I do think that all of these employees should read the book, Work Won't Love You Back. Because when they started giving their own money to make up for the mistake, I was like, come on.
Enough.
I took that as like, where else would their money be going?
That's
the only reason yeah. I did. I don't think I paused at that, but you're right.
Mean, one bitch is going to Harvard, Katrina.
She could have just asked her dad. Oh my God. Why are we even having this movie? Just ask your dumb dad. Tell him you're going to rehab, but don't. We fix you. And then use the money to keep the store open. Like, what are we even doing? Yeah. I did like the way the friendships held up. And yeah. the way that, mm-hmm. like, even the negative parts of it, they were talking about, like, the way you can just get your feelings hurt and then make up. Yeah. I do like the way they approach mental illness for, like, yes. a girl everyone would love and someone that you would assume is, like, having issues and them just kind of both having.
Uh-huh. And I love that they had those different characters. They were, like, AJ was very supportive of Deb. And on the surface, if this was the Breakfast
yes,
Club, they wouldn't
so
have
protective.
Had that friendship in the beginning.
And he was so, like, what's going on? Yeah, I did love that he seemed like the, like you're saying, the considerate friend where mm-hmm. everyone else is like, oh, Deb messing around with her. And he's like, no, I can tell something's, like, yeah. super wrong with you.
Yeah. He's who I would have tried to blow if I worked there.
Absolutely, he would have, Dottie. For sure. And he would have let you down very gently and respectfully.
Or maybe not at all, Katrina.
He would have said, here's the mic, baby. Me, 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 me.
He would have told you to speak into the mic.
One last thing that aged well, and I don't know if it's because we're coming off of Sucker Punch, and I was just, it was a life raft of some sort of feminist understanding. But I love the scene where they get those potential contracts for Music Town, and Gina and Deb are next to each other, and they're like, let's not fight, let's rip. I was like, yeah! Like,
I wrote that down, too. Yes, I love that so much, of being like, you know what? We hate each other, but that's literally the least important thing right now. Let's yeah. just, like, focus our energies on the task at hand, which is capitalism. Mm-hmm. One thing that blockbustered was there's no brown people. Are there any brown people in this movie?
There are not.
Not one.
No.
Not a one.
Not even in line to meet Rex Manning. All three people that were cut from the movie were probably people of color. They were like, we don't need this.
Joe also adopted a small black girl, Cutter. Like, just, they were just all children Joe adopted also. They were all of Lucas's siblings.
So that is the end, everybody. Katrina, let everyone know where they can follow you, find you, support you.
Yeah, you can follow me at Katrina Savad. It's just Davis backwards. It's Katrina with a K, like the hurricane, and then Sivad. And yeah, like my Instagram, my Twitter, my website, everything's the same. So
perfect.
If you liked me talking about movies, follow me and see if I'm funnier in other things.
Okay. Thank you so much for coming yes. back. We love Thank having you. You on. You're welcome yes. back literally anytime.
Yes, this is so much fun.
I'll keep a close eye on your story, see what other movies you like, and then you'll be booked for next year.
Donnie, make a movie heartthrob list, and we'll just talk about a bunch of movie dudes.
Perfect. It's
love that. It's decided, it's and so it yeah. is.
So, cuties, next week we will be covering Austin Powers. Yeah, baby. So come back for that. We will talk to you later. Love you like a sister. Bye.
Thank you for listening to I Am the Cute One. If you want more, head to patreon.com/IamTheCuteOne for uncut, unedited, and unhinged video and audio footage of current episodes, as well as even more bonus content.
And if you like what you heard, please be sure to leave a 5-star rating and subscribe to our show. And to help us grow this community of chaotic cuties, share an episode with a friend you think would pass the vibe check.
And to see the madness, check out our YouTube channel, where video footage from all current episodes are posted weekly. Weekly.
You can follow me at Real Donnywood on Instagram and all other social media platforms.
And if you want more of my personal brand of chaos, check me out at Oh No Chels.
Talk to you later. Love you like a sister. Cuties, you know I cannot see a movie without pretending I'm in it, and now it's your turn. Have you ever tried to use the Force when no one's looking or thought about what superheroes would win in a fight? Then you'll want to stop what you're doing, unless you're driving, and visit Sideshow.com. Your eyes do not deceive you. They have a life-size, impeccably detailed replica of the child from Star Wars The Mandalorian.
Now, I don't mean to brag, but Sideshow did send me the child. I call him Baby Yoda. I have since learned that is not his name, but he is my son now, so I will be continuing to call him as such. And we have been playing dress up, having photo shoots, and just having a grand old time. But if that one doesn't speak to you, how about a movie-accurate statue of Christopher Reeve as Superman?
They got that too.
But just wait until you see the incredibly lifelike figures of Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man.
We are thrilled to have Sideshow sponsoring our podcast today. They offer a wide selection of premium figures, statues, and fine art from the worlds of Star Wars, DC, Marvel, Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, and so much more.
These limited edition, handcrafted, officially licensed collectibles bring pop culture's biggest icons to life in your home.
And here is the best part. You can get an exclusive $50 off your first order of $200 or more. It's a great opportunity for new customers to dive into the world of high-quality collectibles. Or you can gift it to that super geek in your life.
Perhaps that person in your life that you know would cringe when they hear that I've been letting my daughter sleep with my Baby Yoda. And again, that I refuse to stop calling it Baby Yoda.
Plus, shopping at Sideshow earns you 5% back in Sideshow rewards, meaning for every $100 spent, you get $5 back in rewards that can be used on future purchases. While geeking out is its own reward, your collection goes farther with Sideshow. So, what are you waiting for? Visit Sideshow.com, promo code CUTEONE right now, and get ready to let your geek side show.
Oh, that's clever. Sideshow. Like Sideshow.com? I get it.